Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week.
This is episode 161 of the Roguecast, and we are starting off with news coming up these next couple weekends. Big weekends.
Yes.
So this Sunday is the Magic the Gathering Amonkhet pre-release. I believe we still have some room.
We've got a few spaces left, but it's filling up.
Yeah, it is filling up, so if you want to come out for that, make sure and call in and get your name on the list. And then the next Saturday, not this coming Saturday, but the one after that, will be International Tabletop Day.
Yay!
And we'll have all kinds of board games going on. Seems like we're going to have a pretty good turnout for that this year, so it'll be a lot of fun. You can go to the Facebook event or to our website and see what the timeline looks like as far as what games we're playing when. But basically, starting about 12... and running till about, I don't know, 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be games all day.
And it's a good list of games.
Yeah, it'll be fun stuff. And then, Saturday, May 6th, is Free Comic Book Day, which you guys might have heard of.
It's only been going for, what, 15, 16 years?
Yeah. Crazy. And so that we're now staring at like 30 boxes of comics back here.
Yeah, we're crammed in this room because we're surrounded by, like, it's like a comic fort.
Yep, it is. We will hopefully get our report to you and maybe next week of stuff we think y'all should look out for.
Yeah.
I want to say just as a whole, the lineup looks great. I mean, I was flipping through books while I was counting them, and there's some great ones in here. So I'm excited to sort of get to talk about them a little bit more.
I snuck a quick read of the Star Trek Mirror Universe one.
Oh, nice.
It's fun.
I have not had a chance to look at anything because I was at the beach all weekend.
Oh, Mr. Man. While we were reading comics, you were at the beach. I guess we both did okay.
Yeah. No, Nick was counting comics. Nick was in hell.
That's true. I was in hell.
Also dealing with computer issues. It was a rough week.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. There was also a bunch of news. For one thing, the Star Wars Celebration happened.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of... We'll probably wait till next week to talk about the Disney parks, but I do want to talk about it because... It sounds cool as hell.
But they made a ton of announcements just in general.
And some surprises. So let's run them down. Forces of Destiny. This is their Women of the Star Wars Universe-focused animated series. They're going to be on Disney XD.
Yep.
I believe they're sort of... Yeah, they're going to be... They'll debut on Disney YouTube in July, then be packaged with 8 others in the fall for a pair of TV specials. There are 8 new 2D animated shorts. Central figures are Princess Leia from the original trilogy, Padme Amidala, Rey, Rogue One's Jyn Erso, and the trio of rebels, Sabine Wren, Ahsoka Tano, and Hera Syndulla. That's super cool.
Yeah, I think this is a great thing.
And they're doing an action figure line tie-in, very much in the vein of, like, the superhero girls.
Well, yeah, these are sort of the 12-inch superhero dolls that have been kind of becoming prominent with the DC superhero girls.
Yeah.
They're $20, and some of the larger ones, like, I know they're actually doing, like, a Chewbacca. That is, like, $25.
Hmm.
But the price point on these are great. They look awesome.
The first round is what? Princess Leia, Padme...
Princess Leia, Jen, it's Hoth
and,
Leia.
And Sabine?
Sabine. And I feel like there's one more,
and I can't remember who. It's Rey.
It's Rey.
And Rey comes to BB-8, and Princess Leia comes to R2-D2, which, by the way, I'm just saying, why does Sabine not come with Chopper?
I know. It feels like... Maybe Hera will come with Chopper.
I understand why Jyn doesn't come with, what's his name? The droid from K2SO?
Yeah.
Because he's a big droid.
He's a big droid.
But I'm saying, if they're all coming with droids, she should have come with Chopper.
That's true. It would have been cool.
Is the look of this kind of like a stylized thing, like Rebels and Clone Wars before it?
It appears to be, but it's 2D, not 3D, which Rebels and Clone Wars are both 3D.
Huh.
So that's really interesting. And also... It's nice to see. DC Supergirls has been super successful in reaching out to young girls and older women, because we know our friend, like, Vinny has went on a search and bought all the DC Supergirls.
Yeah, the figure lines are fantastic. I mean, they're fantastic, and they have a wide range of people go after them.
Now,
so.
Nick, you know the action figure market.
Yeah.
I've been told that female action figures don't sell.
Well, that's a lie. Well, here's the thing. that actually was the truth for a long time.
Do you think it was, though, or do you think it was a self-fulfilling prophecy?
It may have been a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, but and also just the figures, the female figures that they did make at the point in time,
yeah,
just were awful.
Well, I feel like it's one of these things, it's kind of like when they say, you know, female-led, they're still doing the female-led movies don't work. They'll put out one that's not very good,
right,
and they will use that as the bar to say, oh, well, that doesn't work. Nobody looks at, like, Triple X 3 and says, oh, Vin Diesel movies don't sell.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I imagine that, like, kind of clunky old, the earliest Star Wars female figures were probably pretty obnoxiously bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, were made, like, basically they'll take a, using all the same philosophy of the male figures, not sort of accounting for a little bit different body types.
And yeah. Now, I'll just to take Marvel Legends as a sort of prime example, you at least get one female figure in the wave.
Yeah.
You're more than likely going to get two or three,
yeah,
which is a complete reversal of what they used to be. So yeah.
We're still trying to get better about it, but it's still a pain to find. Like, you've been trying to find a Miss Marvel figure for me.
Right.
And it seems like it'd be nice if it was just kind of a, hey, I want this figure, I can buy it. But that's like that's probably the figure market. I mean, that's all figures.
Yes.
But yeah, I think it's good to see sort of some movement forward. I think it's a really fun, interesting property.
I think it's a great idea to do a Star Wars-centric female action line of action figures.
They're also giving Captain Phasma a limited series.
Yeah, this will be Marvel. The miniseries, like the Lando and everything. And
is this about her breakout from Starkiller Base, I think?
I believe it is.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because like in the movie, like basically she got locked up and kind of forgotten. And yeah. it was kind of a weirdly...
into a trash
like,
compactor.
Yeah, it was sort of a weirdly... like humiliating thing to do to a character that seemed like they were going to kind of play up as their Boba Fett. You know, I understand that they weren't going to maybe give her a ton of screen time, but she seemed like she would be enigmatic and cool, and that requires her to at least get a few cool scenes, and she didn't really get that.
She did order the slaughter of an entire town.
Right. I mean, she was effective in the Nazi commandant style, but I think they're going to probably be playing her up as kind of a more of a cool badass in this one.
And it's written by Kelly Thompson,
who's
been doing the Hawkeye book that I really like.
Yep.
And art is by Marco Cicchetto, who we've liked on the Star Wars book before.
Man, he's come...
He really has.
He's come a long way. I remember first seeing his stuff on what? Punisher?
Ruckus Punisher, which I think we all thought his storytelling was
kind of
rough.
Kind of stiff, yeah.
But
he's gotten a lot better.
And he's actually done a Star Wars book. Didn't he do the...
He did the... With Rucka, he did
the prequel to
Shattered Empire.
Prequel to Force Awakens,
Right, it was about Poe Dameron's parents.
Yes. Yep.
So, this was an interesting twist. There is another all-ages Star Wars comic coming out, but it's coming from IDW.
I couldn't quite wrap my head around this one.
This makes a lot of sense to me, and I saw people sort of saying, they're like, it doesn't make sense, Disney owns Marvel, why is another company doing Disney books, why is another company doing Star Wars books? And the reason is, this is actually smart business, because Marvel is not good at all-ages books.
That's true.
And IDW has really figured out how to sell all-ages books. Look at how many IDW books we have in our kids section.
Well, I mean, My Little Pony alone. I mean,
My Little Pony, Angry Birds, any number of books that they do.
Right.
So
they have carved out the niche.
Yeah. So it makes sense to go to where the successful all-ages books are, and IDW puts out great books.
It's true.
So this makes a lot of sense to me. I'm surprised that they let them slip through their fingers to that extent.
Right.
But I'm glad they did, because I think Star Wars at Marvel being all ages was going to be a hard sell, harder to distinguish like which one is which. But Star Wars all ages at IDW is going to be very clearly what it is.
It's true.
It is kind of weird, though.
Yeah, it is weird.
And I hope that somewhere at Marvel is like, we should probably use this as a reason to get our act together as far as...
It'd be nice.
I mean, not to say that the Marvel Universe, the all ages books that they do are bad. And
they're not great.
But they're not amazing.
The ones they do are all... They're cell captures from their animated shows. It's not... Nobody's doing, like... You know, look at what Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean with Chris Schweitzer. How much we love that book.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason there isn't a Spider-Man book like that.
Marvel were doing a good all-ages book
I think it wasn't bringing enough money. And I think that the problem is they've discovered in the direct market that it just wasn't bringing money for them.
Yeah. I wonder if they need to do... This sounds weird because Marvel has such potent IPs... If they need to go headhunting for, the next Adventure Time or whatever,
right.
So that they're putting out some stuff that's not their own, they're just a publisher for it, And then they, you know, through that branding, the same way that Boom has,
they
lead people into, like, their all-ages Avengers book and their whatever.
I think that's really smart, because, yeah, Boom and IDW and Dark Horse have all proven that by means of popular licenses, you get more eyeballs on your books.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think I can see where a Disney-owned company isn't interested in doing that.
Right. So, interesting move, though.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it should be a good comic.
Finally, Rebels is getting a final season 4.
Yep.
I still have not watched the end of season 3, and I gather there's some big stuff. I gather that Ahsoka Tano is coming back, which was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, I believe, is it Dave Filoni? Isn't that?
Yeah.
He, during one of the panels, he had at one point had a Ahsoka Tano alive shirt or something with a question mark, and then he changed it to coming back or something like that. Which is awesome to hear.
Yeah.
Also,
little hints about possibly Captain Rex surviving into Return of the Jedi.
You see this? I did.
So there is
I saw a little photo thing that
there's a bit in Return of the Jedi, you know, one of the Rebel Commandos, and they're like their camouflage
on Endor
has like the Santa beard.
Yeah.
And he looks a lot like Rex. And it seems like they may be sort of confirming this fan theory, which is kind of fun.
It is.
So there's actually like an official word saying maybe so.
Maybe so.
That's interesting.
Well, what they saw was a design sheet that has Rex in a new, like, Rebel uniform that looks like the...
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Rex is awesome.
Yep. They managed to, you know, the Clone Wars and the prequels were kind of lame, and they managed to find all these cool niches with their expanded universe and basically non-film prop versions of it.
Yeah. The animated series is great stuff. I also think that 4 seasons is a good run for Rebels.
I mean, I think I made a Facebook comment on saying that I was sad to see it go, but I mean, 4 seasons is nothing to sneeze at, and they've been great.
And they're going on their own terms. Like, they knew this is ending, so they're gonna set an ending up. And there's more coming afterwards, which I'm hoping means maybe some of these characters will continue, just like Clone Wars continues some characters in. Like, maybe the new series will be during the height of the Civil War, Galactic Civil War, like between Star Wars and Empire.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any chance that they'll do stuff that's set post-Jedi?
Post-Jedi leading to Force Awakens is another possibility.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Lots of Star Wars to explore.
Yeah, there's tons of ways. And we know that some of the Rebels people were in Rogue One.
Yeah.
I mean, Chopper was, and a few others.
Roll with me here.
Yep.
What about the story of a single sandcrawler and all the internal politics within... it's got like a few hundred Jawas in there. It's just a thought.
I'd watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a thought. Like a little city on wheels.
And just to mention action figures once again, I just want to throw out that the couple of releases for the Black Series that they did in Star Wars Celebration, big one was Thrawn, which is Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Very cool.
Him getting a figure... Not only in regular release,
is this that's made to look kind of realistic, or is it kind of like on the Clone Wars where you can be stylized?
No, it's Black Series, so it's very much from like the movies. So it's a reimagining of that. He's getting a regular release and also a San Diego Comic-Con release that comes with this giant like bridge type background for him.
Oh, wow.
I think the San Diego Comic-Con one should have him in like cosplay.
And I think the bigger one, which I know our ex-staffer Colin is super excited about, is we're actually getting a Tarkin figure.
Man, Colin really likes bad guys, doesn't he?
I have to say, I kind of like Tarkin now. He's kind of rubbed off on me and liking the
character
as much.
I like how he slaughtered those people.
he's kind of gleefully evil.
Tarkin's a good bad guy.
He is.
And my joke was, of course, the Star Wars Black version looks more realistic than the one in Rogue One.
I know. But he also comes with an interrogator droid, which I think is a fun little...
Is that the little probe droid that's a little torture droid thing?
Yeah, he comes with the torture droid, which is fun.
Yeah.
What else is in those waves, Nick?
Don't know, actually. Okay. I think they've... Teased Qui-Gon Jinn is.
Oh, I think
getting.
I saw that. Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Which a Liam Neeson 6-inch action figure? Why don't? Why wouldn't you want that?
Yep. I think they need to be a Taken action figure series.
God,
kind of surprised there isn't. All right, so that's all the Star Wars news, but there is some other non-Star Wars news. A couple big news in Marvel movie land. They've cast their Cable.
Yep.
And it is none of the people that everybody's been talking about.
I'm a little surprised
by that.
They
seem to be like, they said there was several that seemed like they were almost pinned down.
Yeah. Nope. You know the movie Serenity? Stay with me here.
Okay.
Yeah. You know how when they're like leaving and they're leaving the hooker planet?
Yes.
Companion planet, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
They're trying to track the ship.
Right, and they have all those little...
They fire off extra beacons, all these extra beacons,
Okay.
I think all these rumors were extra beacons, so nobody figured out it was Josh Brolin.
Maybe so.
Josh Brolin is actually Firefly.
Whoa. Yeah. So Josh Brolin has been cast.
Yes.
He honestly is probably going to be a very good casting.
It's a great casting for Cable. Yeah,
it is. He is a gravelly of tone. He's a good actor.
Yep.
I don't know if here's a quick question. Has he been in comedic stuff before?
He's done comedic stuff for the Coen brothers. I mean,
he's got
over the top type stuff. Yeah.
He kind of like straight man, but kind of he could be an over the top straight man.
Well, and Cable's not funny. And Cable is a straight up.
That's what I mean, but you have to have comedic timing still sometimes.
He's got that.
He was in Men in Black 3, which I never saw.
No, I never did. I didn't see that either.
But he's done comedic stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he play like a young K or something like that?
He played a young K.
Okay, yeah. I could see that for sure. Anyway, it's probably pretty good casting.
Yep.
I'm expecting Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool to make a Thanos joke at some point.
Just makes breaking the fourth wall, yes.
Yep.
Weren't you
Thanos? Yeah, he should definitely do it.
I should not be excited for Deadpool 2, goddammit. But I am.
So, well, Randy, I will hold out and be the guy who's not excited.
Would you like my DVD copy of Deadpool?
I can always use two things to burn as to keep me warm when the power goes and the apocalypse comes.
Dave, this is going to be like Fast and the Furious, which I finally converted to after three movies. Deadpool 4 is going to come out, and you're finally going to watch it, and you're like, damn it, it's good.
Well, I guess Josh Brolin, that means he's going to be an X-Force.
Probably,
because,
yeah.
You know, that's the next after Deadpool.
Yeah.
So.
And then we got an announcement, no surprise here, but James Gunn has officially signed on to direct Guardians 3.
Yeah.
Which, that's great. It's going to be a trilogy. Of course it's going to be a trilogy.
I mean, Josh Whedon kind of petered out after two Avengers, so I mean...
Did you say Josh Whedon?
I said Joss.
Okay, just checking.
Sure, it could be one of the Whedon brothers, you never know.
You want to make sure. No, it's Joss.
So, I mean, I know these movies are kind of taxing on people, so that he's really up to doing a third one is pretty good news. I mean, that Marvel hasn't crushed his soul with the amount of time.
Was James Gunn the one who posted the story about Vin Diesel?
Yes, awesome.
Which was an amazing story.
Yeah, James Gunn's a great guy to follow on Facebook because he seems very genuine. He seems very sort of upbeat and interesting.
We might talk about that specific story when we talk about Fast and Furious later, but if nothing else, people should Google James Gunn, Vin Diesel.
Yes, exactly.
He has a funny anecdote about it.
And then finally, we got a little bit of casting news for the Miles Morales animated movie that Lord Miller are doing.
Yep.
Right.
Shameik Moore is going to be the voice of Miles Morales.
Which I think is perfect.
Which is weird to me because I've seen him, I saw him in Dope.
Yeah.
And he plays sort of younger in Dope. And Dope is like a high school kid.
Yeah.
But I just finished watching The Get Down.
Yeah.
And in The Get Down, he's the 20-something older guy.
He's, what's his name?
He's Shaolin Fantastic.
Shaolin Fantastic, yeah.
And it's funny because he plays both those roles very convincingly, and I've realized it's the facial hair.
Ah.
He takes off his facial hair, and he looks a lot younger.
Like a little punk kid?
Yep.
But he's just voice acting this.
Yeah, anyway. I thought maybe his voice was a little too old for Miles.
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
But I think he's going to work great. Because, again, I'm coming off Shaolin Fantastic, where he's playing a little older.
I need to catch up on The Get Down.
Yeah.
I'm behind.
But I'm excited for this. It's good casting, and I'm curious to see how that movie goes. All right. Also coming to animated movies, Watchmen is getting an R-rated animated adaptation.
This does not shock me.
Do you know what I last thing I remember is that there was said that Watchmen killed the R-rated superhero movie.
Yeah. Deadpool resurrected it.
Deadpool resurrected it.
I don't know what that says about the world.
And DC's double downing on the notion of bringing the real Watchmen to...
Like, all right, the squid. We'll do the squid.
Yeah.
It seems like a weird call. Like, I feel like it's not a purely strong time for it. But Watchmen is entering the DC universe in some way, shape, or form. In this very week, we might be finding out about that. So I guess it makes sense on that front. And in general, it sounds like they want to continue to develop it as an IP, much to Alan Moore's chagrin.
Yeah, I'm mostly amused at Alan Moore's reaction to these headlines. He doesn't react publicly anymore. He's smart about that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he saw it and just like, banged his head on the desk somewhere.
Definitely get a Watchmen movie that has no slow motion, so that's a plus.
They can still animate in slow motion.
But I'm kind of oddly looking forward to this in a way.
See what they do. It honestly doesn't need a lot of hard cuts. There's not any super serious language. I think they say shit in there, which was a little shocking at the time because that was not common in comics at the time.
Just sex and violence, which is...
But even that is essentially off-screen type stuff. It could all fit in a PG-13 movie if you wanted it to.
But it's not gonna.
Right. No. Contextually, it feels like an R.
Yeah.
And it's serious stuff. I wonder just how much they're going to include in it. Is it just going to be a singular movie?
Yeah, I believe it is.
It's the one that's directed to DVD.
So things, they're still going to have to pare it down heavily.
Yeah.
Unless they want to do a 3-hour animation.
It's even more than then, that. Yeah.
You would probably need I would say like a 6-hour-long episode miniseries would probably do decent credit to it.
That would be a better way to do it. They're not going to do that.
So. Right. And I understand that's a lot to risk.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will be curious to check it out.
But the thing is, like, if you're doing it, that's what feels weird to me. It's like, they've already made a live-action adaptation.
They've already done a crappy version. Why don't they do a really good version?
Why not do the miniseries that people, like, if you're going to do an animated one, why not go ahead and do it as a miniseries? Why not do justice to it? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And it may just be to have more Watchmen product that people can buy as Watchmen's star rises again for the current DC stuff.
Wonder when they're going to start making Watchmen buttons available and a little bloodstained happy face button.
I mean, they had those as promotion in the 80s, so it has been around.
I expect those to make a come around again.
I just need that Rorschach toaster.
All right.
We wish Dave was making things up, but he's really not.
I believe it was just a Watchmen toaster, though, right? It was. With the button look on it now.
Two more bits of casting news. Jude Law, coming off playing Young Pope, he's going to just play Young Pete, young versions of old characters now.
I know.
Because he's playing Young Dumbledore in the sequel to Fantastic Beasts.
I'm excited for this. That's a cool casting.
Never saw Fantastic Beasts?
You know what I should call it? Kid Dumbledore.
Fantastic Beasts was great. I actually put it above a lot of the Harry Potter movies.
Interesting. I want to watch it at some point. It sort of hit my radar.
Well, I think it's just fascinating to sort of see a separate side. Basically, the American version of like wizarding schools and all that other stuff and the culture. It's just completely different than what we've seen.
But it did feel like an expansion of that same universe. Oh, yeah, very much so. World building and stuff. Not like some misstep or something.
No, not at all. And they introduced their own new big villain, and so this continuing adventures of sort of that.
So young Dumbledore, is he going to be like at Hogwarts at this point or something? I actually don't know his history that well.
I don't know, actually. I forget if he was like an Auror.
I also don't remember if he's not like some kind of Gandalf type person or Merlin where he's like actually hundreds of years old, right? Did he just live to like 60 or 80 or whatever?
Yeah, he's just a normal. Normal length.
Yeah, because I mean, this will be in like the 30s, right? And then that when it takes place, so that makes sense.
They should call him Sexy Dumbledore.
Yeah, no, because that's against Jude Law's branding. Jude Law is young version of should play.
It overwhelms all other branding.
Yeah, and any old characters you can think of, he will play the young version of that character. I'm blanking on any old characters right now. People who are old, he's gonna play young old man Logan.
Jude Law is a great actor, and I'm excited to see what he brings to this.
And then Dolph Lundgren is playing one of the bad guys, if not maybe the main bad guy in Aquaman?
I don't think he's playing the main bad guy, if I'm remembering correctly.
He's some Atlantean person, right?
I believe he plays one of the is like the king of Atlantis.
He's playing Nereus, who believes that Mera belongs to him.
Right.
Oh, so
like one of the Mera, rival really? Cities?
Yeah.
What's his name is not a young man.
No, he's not.
Is this like that sounds to me kind of like almost like an arranged marriage? That's what I'm thinking.
He may be
like
Nick said, he may be the older king.
Right.
From what I understand, I believe Patrick Wilson is playing Orin or Ocean Master.
Okay. All right.
Patrick Wilson seems like good casting for that.
Yeah, I think so.
Dolph Lundgren seems a little bit odd to me because I don't think of him as a strong actor.
But I think they want to do Undersea Barbarian thing, so that makes a certain amount of sense. And they probably couldn't get Schwarzenegger.
An aging warrior. Yeah. Honestly, Schwarzenegger would have been too distracting. Yeah. He is Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger would make weird underwater puns, and it wouldn't work.
He's gurgling water.
Yes.
So I can see it. It still seems a little weird to me, but
I have this weird. I like Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah,
he's done some horrible movies. He's also done really some fun action movies of the 80s too. I mean, Universal Soldier, He-Man.
You will find no Lundgren love in this room.
The Punisher.
The best I've got in there is the Masters of the Universe movie, which I thought was fun enough, although I don't know if I've revisited it really since I was a kid.
But isn't Lundgren one of these guys who's like actually a nuclear physicist or something?
Yeah, he's like super, super
smart. He's a genius.
And even right now, he has test tubes in his hand, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, I do. All right, we're going to be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, April 19th. And Nick, since you got the blockbusters, I'm going to let you kick it off this week.
Okay, cool. I'm going to talk about... Oh, I guess I'm going to spoil something for everyone, and that is Captain America is a bad guy.
What?
I know. If you haven't been following this for the past, like, 2 years.
I do think it spoiled everybody's mood in the comics world.
Yep.
But this what I'm referring to this week is Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 16, and Secret Empire, Marvel's new big event.
Kind of linked books.
Linked books. This is Secret Empire number 0. And it's sort of the opening salvo, which is, in fact, the title of Captain America's
book. Subtitle or whatever.
Of his taking over the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
Nick Spencer, this is sort of a culmination to what Nick Spencer's run on Cap has been.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, since the beginning, which is it? How long has he been on the book? It's been
a few years.
Yeah, which is, that's a great run for a writer.
I would guess, just based on this, I'm guessing that Spencer may be leaving Cap after all of this.
I would imagine so.
I would bet
it'd be kind of like his final statement on it.
I would bet that someone else would be taking over after Secret Empire. And I know a lot of you out there are saying, good, I'm a little disappointed because I've liked what Spencer's done, even if I have some issues with his Hydra Cap.
Yeah, the Hydra Cap is a little weird, but I think it's done well. It's executed very well.
I think we all have, like, talking about it, like, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
My general thought was, like, I sort of might have preferred it as, like, a simple, like, 6-issue storyline.
Yeah.
Or even maybe, like, a year-long storyline, which I guess is what it's sort of been.
It kind
of
is,
Has it been more than a year?
It's been more than a year.
Yeah.
But the notion of, like, what if you took somebody with all the leadership abilities, all the tactical abilities, and the powers and stuff of Cap, and he was the bad guy.
Yeah, and the thing is, he can't be just, like, under the control of Dr. Faustus, because then you're getting Cap fighting against himself. You can't...
Yeah.
He's not going to be, you know, the same tactical genius if he's also fighting himself. This is Captain America, but what if he had been Hydra all
along? Legit believing in the bad things he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is so tell me, as somebody who has not been reading Cap, what exactly is going on? What's Cap doing that's bringing this all to a head right now?
So we should mention, by the way, that Cap 16 is you read it before Secret Empire.
Yeah, you read it before, and it definitely is setting up a lot of things. It's basically exploring, you know, relationship with Helmet or Baron Zemo and Thunderbolts.
Right, rather than being his foe in this alternate universe, he's his best friend.
And also Taskmaster.
Zemo is Evil Cap's Bucky.
Yep.
Yep. It's also dealing with his relationship with his mother, and also a relationship with Madame Hydra.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. There's just a lot going on. It also starts out with Maria Hill finding out exactly what Steve is doing.
That was a cool scene.
Which apparently I have not been reading Cap. So apparently she was tried and, like, kicked out of S.H.I.E.L.D.
For her actions on Assault on Pleasant Hill, which sort of started this whole thing.
Right.
She was the one who messed with the Cosmic Cube and got it into the hands of Hydra in the first place by accident.
And then Secret Empire, you know, starts with Cap meeting the Kraken, which is from Secret Warriors, the Jonathan Hickman S.H.I.E.L.D. book from a while ago. And actually, a lot of concepts that were in that book are Nick Spencer uses.
I was wondering
uses.
Who that dude was. I just read a few pages of this, and I was like, who the hell is Kraken? Isn't that, like, an old villain?
Yeah, no, Spencer grabbed for
is
his...
Is this a different villain from the old Kraken?
Yeah, I think so.
There was some kind of crazy pirate dude or something.
Yeah, no, it's not
no,
that
no,
dude.
This is basically... He's
I think
been a Hydra.
Scourge might have killed the old Kraken.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, Kraken was sort of, like, the mentor of Hydra. He was, like, the teacher, the one who found, like, the important characters.
Yeah, Spencer has definitely dug into... Everybody got really mad because Cap was a Nazi, because Hydra was, you know, Nazi organization. And Spencer's going back to more of the Hickman style, where Hydra is an organization that's been around for a long, long time, and they have much larger goals. And basically,
and it got swallowed up by
the Red Skull took it over and turned it into a Nazi organization.
Yeah.
But they're normally just an old-fashioned evil cult.
Yes, exactly.
With tendrils extending back for centuries or whatever.
Correct.
And I think that probably Spencer's biggest misstep was in not setting that out from the very outset, so that Cap did not look like he might be a Nazi.
I can swallow this a little bit better. Cap being an outright Nazi just doesn't work for
me. Well, that's the thing. Is like, he, if you look into it, if you read the sophistication that's in the story, Spencer thought this through.
Yeah, very
and it's
much
all
so.
There is, like, Hydra, why Hydra does what it does, how the Red Skull sort of took things over. But that requires reading a lot of the stories. And if all you read is the news blurb that says Cap is a Nazi, it looks bad.
It's clickbait. I mean, it's exactly what it is.
And that's, I mean, part of that is on Spencer. I think he needed to have been out in front of it immediately and said, no, there's more to this, and not, read 12 issues and trust me, he should have set that out right from the very beginning.
I think they were probably a little bit in the mode of all publicity is good publicity and didn't realize how bad it might look.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Kraken being associated with them makes a lot of sense because, you know, you got all the multi-legged Kraken, just like a Hydra's head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They, I mean, Spencer's drawing on not just what Hickman's done, but other people have done, introducing other Hydra people, Madam Hydra, and I forget who all is on the council, but various takes on Hydra from various
people. Pretty much every cat villain you can think of is probably on there. It's,
so tell me why this is coming to a head. What's going on? What is Cap doing that's making this?
Cap has basically, through the past couple of years, have been sort of inserting himself into different situations and sort of moving the board, moving the pieces on the board.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he's the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. now.
He, when Maria Hill got ousted, he became the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was what he wanted. And this, the book sort of sees a series of incidents occur through, like, there's a Chitauri attack on Earth. Mm-hmm. There's a huge supervillain attack on New York. And sort of getting pieces and players in the field to sort of maneuver them, to take them out of the game, essentially.
And I don't know if, like, if this is, like, a secret that can be revealed, but, like, do we know what his end game is? Does he want to rule the Earth? Does he want to destroy the Earth?
What he believes is he wants to return the world to what he knows, in his head, what he knows to be.
Yeah, there's a big reveal in Cap, and it's sort of alluded to in Secret Empire number 0, about why Cap is doing what he's doing and how Hydra convinced him that this is what he should do.
Yes.
I don't want to give it away, but it's sort of a clever mechanic, even though it's not 100% easily explainable.
But, you know, just know with every Cap story, Cosmic Cube is involved, so there's that craziness. I think what it kind of deals down to is, like, the interactions. I liked the Sharon Carter stuff.
Yep.
And then all these people figuring out that Cap is bad.
And nobody wants to believe it.
No, no one wants to believe it. Like, Rick Jones is involved, and he's kind of a little just not sure. There's Ironheart, and I think it's Tony Stark's AI.
It's the AI,
And one of the... for me, it's, like, the Bronze Age Iron Man suit that I... originally know him from.
Yeah, that's his hologram form or whatever.
Yeah, them sort of figuring it out. But I don't know. It's just big, grand kind of set pieces, and I feel like it's done extremely well, so I have to commend Nick Spencer on that. Yeah.
I love a good villains take over the world story. I love that's definitely where we're at. I'm curious to see where this goes forward from here. Also, Daniel Acuna's artwork's really nice.
Yep.
Man,
that guy has turned amazing.
Well, I don't know when it was, but I wasn't really liking his stuff, and then when you started liking Uncanny Avengers...
I think it was around there, because he was definitely very good when things were going on Cap Sam Wilson.
But I picked up recently that giant omnibus of Uncanny Avengers, and his artwork is beautiful, and it's just as beautiful here. I think he's got a really
nice... I mean, I like how he does... His action scenes are cool, his kind of, his character talky scenes are cool... He does great costume design, or that is to say, they're... what I like is, like, it's kind of sort of painty and realistic, but not in that Alex Ross kind of way. It still feels kind of larger than life and heroic and colorful, even.
It's not mentioned here, so I assume he does all of his own colors and stuff as well.
Oh.
I mean, it just says artist Daniel Acuna, and it doesn't have, like, you know, artist or colorist or inker. And I want to compliment his colors. They are vibrant and vivid and just fantastic. I think this is a very interesting start. And like Randy, I am curious to see where it goes.
Dave?
My pick today, since I didn't read as much stuff, this is my singular pick, I should say, is Jeff Lemire's Royal City, number 2. It's his creator-owned book from Image that's kind of slice of lifey, but kind of also, it's pretty dramatic, and there is something going on that feels slightly supernatural. Mm-hmm. I just don't know quite what it's going to ultimately be revealed as, but it's essentially a story built around an ensemble cast that is mostly made up from this single family. Of sort of very flawed individuals, not always horribly flawed, but it's funny because it reminds me, they're not wealthy like the Bluths on Arrested Development, but it reminds me almost of a more serious take on that.
Huh.
The mom in there, the sort of matriarch, I guess, of it, even though she's not a sort of matriarch type, has the same sort of cutting, biting style as the mom on Arrested Development, but she is not... It's like, it's not humorous. She's she's a mean person. It's kind of a hard to describe book because this is all kind of personality conflicts and things.
Yeah.
Essentially, they're kind of at a turning point in their lives because the father has had a stroke, and it's sort of bringing the family together. Even at the same time, it's sort of heightening their problems with each other. One of them, there's a lady who's got a... This is a small town, I think like 45,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think by comparison, like Round Rock is like... Isn't it like 100,000?
I don't know.
I think it is. So I think it's like... Yeah. So smaller than Round Rock. And they're it's a little struggling economically. And, you know, she's got to play this... You know, she's trying to promote this big new, renewal plan. And so... That there's this trigger or this domino effect of how it affects her husband, who works at the big factory that's at the center of it. But at the heart of it, really, though, is these conversations with characters. So it starts out with like a guy who's he's been married for 3 years, and his wife, who's an actress, it is weird because he calls her up and you see her and she's just wearing a spacesuit. And she looks like she's in front of a starfield, and it looks like he's calling a person from the future. but what the sort of the camera pulls back eventually in a way, and you see that it's a set that she's standing on, and she's in a movie. And he's in back in town because he's checking on his father who's had a stroke. And this is like, it's a great opening conversation. It's funny because like just out of this conversation, I was like, man, it's a tough and very real conversation between two people who've like worn each other down. And who don't want to fight about it anymore.
Yeah.
And they're like, at a certain point, like they're about to start fighting. And he's like, let's just tell me how your day's going. How's the movie going? And
yeah.
I don't know. It felt really real. And dramatic. I like the characters. There's not a bad guy, which is interesting in this. Nobody is really portrayed as like, oh, this is the cause of all the problems or anything like that. They're all interestingly flawed.
I can easily see this being like an FX miniseries.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think it lends itself well to that kind of cinematic feel.
Where they have the slight supernatural or something thing going on is that several of them have seen visions of a younger, like what would have been a young brother in the family who I think is supposed to be dead. And it's as if they are... different him at different ages, like, and I don't think he grew up to these ages, so it's almost like they're seeing versions of him that could have existed.
Yeah.
And one of them, who's kind of the he's basically like a drunk and kind of a like burnout kind of guy, goes out, gets drunk, he's in trouble like with the local biker gang from having borrowed money for him. He's like going out getting drunk with brother Tommy, who looks to be about his same age. But we know Tommy is dead. And some people are talking to him occasionally, like, who are you talking to? It reminds me in a weird way of, like almost like, the way John Wayne is in Preacher, yeah. Or the way Elvis was in True Romance.
Or a right. Bit of
there's a surreal, yeah, there's this surreal thing where people are definitely talking to something that's not there. But there's also, without going into all the intricate plot stuff, yeah, this guy does have a run-in with these biker dudes who he owes money, and there's a sort of a violent confrontation at a bar. There's another great conversation here between the guy whose wife is in the movie, and he's talking to the mom, and it's another one where they kind of, they both know that they wear on each other, but they have an interesting conversation that's sort of, everybody's trying to be on their best behavior because of the dad and the stroke and stuff, and I don't know, it seems very real. This guy, by the way, is a writer and is working on a novel that was promised after he's had, I think, a successful novel two novels back or whatever, mm-hmm. And he hasn't been able to recapture it. And he's clearly supposed to have this new novel out to fulfill some obligations and is like hasn't started it yet. And he's also occasionally getting weird messages on his radio in the car that seem to have that brother Tommy's name showing up. So... It's interesting because I think... Randy, do we know if there is anything supernatural in this? Like, has Jeff Lemire said anything?
Nope.
Because it feels slice of life, but there is definitely... I feel like there's no way it can't not be supernatural.
Right.
Unless it's somehow some weird science fiction concept. Anyway, I'm in love with the series in a way I didn't expect, and the art is insanely beautiful. So easily the best Jeff Lemire's ever done. And it's, you know, it's his watercolor style, fully painted. And, you know, it makes this the place, Royal City, which he's building up the city as much as the characters, feel like a real place you could go to. I don't know if you'd want to. It seems like kind of a shitty town. Actually, there was graffiti in the bathroom where somebody had taken Royal City and converted it into Royal Shitty. So, it's a weird book to describe because I don't think it actually innately sounds interesting. I didn't have an interest in it based on the premise. It's only the actual writing and, of course, his art that really make it for me.
And if...
But I have a feeling it's going to be like one of my picks of the year. That's how much I like
Interesting.
It.
And if you like Jeff Lemire and his artwork, he's also got an original graphic novel that hits this week, which is called, what, Roughneck? Roughneck. Which
I don't even know what it's about.
It just looks pretty.
It looks very pretty.
I bet it does.
And if it's anything like this, or if it's anything like his previous ones, like Underwater Welder. And... I'm blanking on some of his other ones.
You know what's interesting?
They're fantastic.
Some writer-artists... Once they start to make it as a writer, they stop doing the art. They're like, that stuff is... It's clearly so labor-intensive. And he... I don't know if he just likes to draw or what, but he is clearly a guy who's going to keep doing it because he's also drawing AD with Scott Snyder.
Yep.
So this guy is by no means falling down in the art department.
Nope.
All right, Randy, what you got?
All right. It is my week for Image and for Donny Cates, Austin author Donny Cates, because both my picks are Donny Cates' picks. The new one is called Redneck. It is a vampire book. It is set in East Texas, as is God Country, although God Country ranges a bit. The art is Lisandro Estherin, and colorist is D. Kuniff. And I don't know either of those names, but man, does it look nice. It is reminds me a little bit of Eduardo Rizzo's stuff, with a little bit more... It's... In terms of sort of shadows and colors, but...
I don't know if it's... Is it Raphael Albuquerque?
Raphael Albuquerque. A little
bit of him in there.
A little stylized.
It's nice looking.
But anyway, so this is about a family of vampires who have been living in East Texas for hundreds of years. They sort of keep to themselves. And the story is told about a... like the grandpa's on the porch drinking a beer, you know, reflecting. And his granddaughter, who can read minds... because some vampires have different powers than others, start sort of asking him questions about things he's thinking about. And they start talking about how the patriarch of the family, like the great-grandfather, thinks they shouldn't drink cow blood and paint thinner. I guess that's what they're drinking now. So they're not drinking people. They're not out, like, murdering. They sort of keep to themselves. And
the grandfather thinks they shouldn't do that?
The great-grandfather, who we don't see.
He's like, you should be drinking people.
He's like, you should be drinking people. And this grandfather is clearly the one who sort of brought them... to this sort of let's get away from people place. And this is a generational story. It's like a bunch of family. So the younger kids decide to go into town and go to a strip club. And that seems like it's potentially going to cause trouble. Because when they do, they run into another family that knows the truth of their family. And their patriarch is sort of this deacon named Father Landry. And he seems to be sort of one of these... hypocritical East Texas preacher types.
Yep.
And there's a lot of threats made about how they're going to, you know, burn up the family and that kind of thing. And I don't want to give away the inciting incident, but something bad happens that might put these vampires and this family on a course to war.
Are these kind of a likable lot of vampires, or are they an unruly types?
They're unruly types, but they're likable. It's definitely like a small town family.
Okay.
They're Donny Cates talks about it in his text piece, but Donny Cates is clearly a guy who came from sort of small-town Texas, or at least knows small-town Texas.
He does.
And this feels like small-town Texas. He talks about Lubbock, you know, and he's talking about this is sort of a little bit like that. There's a family tree of violence, and his dad sort of deciding to break that cycle, and sort of... These vampires, it'd be kind of like a family deciding to get out of, like, the KKK.
Right, right.
And try to live a different way, but also try to respect their heritage. It's really interesting. If you've liked what God Country's been so far, this is very different, but of a piece with it. And it's a really good first issue. I feel like Image, when Image is on, it is doing what Vertigo did at its best, and this feels like something that Vertigo would have produced at their height.
Given how... fondly God Country was received, I think even being sort of in that ballpark, people are going to want to check it out.
Yep. And God Country number 4 is my other pick this week. This is when Emmett Quinlan goes to hell to confront the God of Death. And it's all about that. and his magic sword basically
talking just about that, just going to hell to confront the god of death.
Yep. There's some interesting stuff where his son is up there sort of talking to his wife about whether or not they believe in God after everything they've seen. And this is just a really, really great book, and it's another great issue in what is likely to wind up in my top five of new comics for this year.
You know, between those two and Royal City, that means I believe about a half of our books today will end up Image.
Well, and Curse Wars number 4 just barely missed my cut.
Yep.
So, and also Descender is this week. So yeah, it's a good week for Image.
Image is like, don't forget me.
Yep. Nick, what is your backup pick?
Well, I'm going to pick the other kind of mega thing for this week, and that is Batman 21, which starts the Button storyline. And it's written,
the Button, by the way, does not sound like a cool name for a story,
right?
But it is, of course, referring to the smiley face Button from Watchmen, which
has been in Batman's cave.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is written by Tom King, drawn by Jason Fabok.
Yep. Tom King's been writing it since the relaunch, doing a good job.
He has been doing a good job. He's doing big picture stuff. This is a direct fallout of the DC Rebirth number one. I mean, it's picking up those threads and sort of running with them. Batman is sort of trying to figure out what this Button means and what it is. And
did it just turn up in his cave?
Yes. In the wall, yeah.
Right.
But this also has sort of ties to the Legion. There's Legion things in here. So that's definitely going to see a big comeback. They're clearly
building to something big.
Yeah, they're definitely building something big. And there's a big reappearance of a character in this one as well. So, yeah. I mean, but I feel like Tom King has done an interesting job kind of mixing Batman with a hockey game, which I was never kind of not sure exactly.
It was a weird thing to hang the story on.
But it's sort of a narrative
construction device, right? For pacing. It reminds whenever I see something like that, it sort of reminds me of experiments that Will Eisner used to do in The Spirit.
Yeah.
And then other writers have since, you know, Frank Miller has sort of controlled pacing in that way sometimes. Not specifically with hockey games, but... out of curiosity, is the hockey game just something that's being broadcast like in Gotham or wherever? Or is it like, Batman have a hockey game?
It's Gotham versus Metropolis. It's like a big hockey game.
But apparently it's a notable hockey game because it definitely fits in with sort of like broader pictures and has a bigger footprint.
Weird.
And then it becomes sort of this brawl in a lot of ways between two characters, Batman and a character I won't name.
Because it's pretty notable story.
And... it's a brutal fight. I mean, it's one that I was not expecting. It's not one that you really expect Batman to really kind of be able to fight in a lot of ways. Because it's a pretty powerful character. And I felt like it was well done. I thought Fabok did a good job of sort of, you know, blow by blow what would happen. And I don't know. There are ties to Watchmen. So we will see more as this progresses, but I thought it was an interesting start.
Is it going to go Batman, Flash, and then another issue of Batman, and then another issue of Flash, and that's it, right?
Next week should be Flash, then it's Batman.
A little mini crossover with a cool lenticular cover, which lots of people have been asking us about, of course.
And which we should mention, we are maybe a little low on that. We had to order it like 2 months in advance. The archer started peaking, of course, well after the orders had gone
out. Right, about a week ago, suddenly everybody wanted it.
So if you want one... probably best to call early in the morning and make sure. We'll have
or
the regular.
Come by.
or come in. We've got the regular edition, but we expect that the lenticular may go pretty
quick. But we are going to limit it one per person.
One per person, yes.
So, as many
please
people
get it if you intend
to
read it and not to sell on eBay.
Yes.
but a few other things that are on my list this week.
Yep.
Let's see. Batwoman number 2, which I thought was a good second issue for the series. Randy mentioned Curse Words just being on the outer edge of his picks, and it was for me as well. I loved this issue.
Yep.
Honestly, I think it's one of the weird series that every issue I've liked it more.
Me too. This was my favorite issue so far. This almost made my pick.
Yeah. The Wildstorm sees its third issue, and dear God, Warren Ellis seems to be back in his true form. I love sort of the world building that he's doing and sort of getting to see the Wildstorm universe in a new way. And I just think it's a ton of fun. Venom number 6, which is The Return of Eddie Brock. I Hate Fairyland number 12, which sees Gertrude try to become a good guy. which you can imagine how that goes.
Yep.
And it has a fun Lone Wolf and Cub homage to its cover. Nick Fury number one, which is James Robinson, and artist, is it Akko?
I believe it is, yep.
Doing sort of a Starenko kind of mod.
This is him doing straight up secret agent stuff for Nick Fury's son.
Nick Fury Jr., who is not just Nick Fury.
Right, he's like a doing field agent stuff where he's being all suave and badass and infiltrate-y in a casino.
Yep.
Yeah.
A very high-tech casino.
I haven't had a chance to read it, but Royals number two, which I'm excited. This deals with Chitauri. It was just a huge week, and I couldn't get through everything.
Yep.
And Super Sons number three, which sees them go up against sort of Kid Amazo, which I'm kind of interesting about.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
Why is there a baby Amazo?
Oh, there's a baby everything, Dave.
Yeah, that's true.
What else is on your stack?
I did want to just quick mention a new comic from Image called Plastic. I don't know the writer, Doug Wagner, but I think folks who have liked, say, my impression is that people who like Nailbiter and stuff like that might want to take a look at this. It is a kind of weird, sort of slightly creepy serial killer type story. Definitely kind of drew me in its first few pages. I didn't have time to read the whole thing, but it is interesting and kind of creepy and unsettling too. There's some burst of unsettling violence, but it's also just some pretty strong storytelling in there. I felt like it had a pretty good handle on making all of its character scenes interesting. So I don't know if there's a particular like hook to it other than this guy, the lead dude, is a weird dude. Cool. Over at Marvel, I wanted to mention the spinoff series from Monsters Unleashed. Was it called? Is Monsters Unleashed the ongoing series? Specifically, this is about the kid who emerged from that, who had the power to like control kaiju.
Yep.
And he actually is called Kid Kaiju.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know what this struck me? I haven't had a chance to read this one yet either, but it looked Big Hero 6-ish.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just like instead of superheroes and stuff, it is more big monsters. And I wasn't sure, but it looked like he might be accompanied by, like, siblings, a brother and a sister. So I don't know if, like, they might be helping out with him, or maybe they just were talking to him. But
I believe Elsa Bloodstone is in there, too,
Elsa Bloodstone
right?
was definitely in it. Anyway, this kind of has that, Umberto Ramos style artwork. It's not him, but it's in that sort of vein.
Yeah.
So I think it's David Baldion, I believe.
Yeah.
It's talented.
I feel like people who have been like kind of enjoying kind of the lighter superhero stuff like Super Sons and things like that, or Nova, that this might be a good comic to check out. And lastly, I just wanted to mention this week that Cave Carson, or more properly, Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye.
Yep.
Has Superman in it.
Yep.
So I will be curious to check that out and see how a quirky book like that incorporates DC's biggest icon.
So I wanted to mention that God Country does have reprints of 1-3 this week. Yep. So we'll have all of it in stock.
I do kind of like when they do that, like all the issues are reprinted at the once.
Ms. Marvel number 17 finishes her run up against a sentient virus. Also includes a great scene of one of her her girlfriends who has come out as a lesbian and accidentally been outed. She had her poetry published, and it's a really sweet scene of sort of friendship and anti-bullying and that kind of thing.
Nice.
And this is all, it's all about her and her friends basically trying to turn the internet nice to neutralize this virus. It's fun, clever storytelling that Ms. Marvel always does. Moon Knight number 13 recaps a bit of Mark Spector's origins. We see him and Bushman interacting the first time as he goes into his mind to confront the Khonshu. Daredevil number 19 continues the story of how Daredevil got his new identity, his new black costume, all that kind of stuff. Basically setting up Sewell's run. Star-Lord number 6 wraps up Zdarsky and Chris Anka's run in this book. This has been a really fun little limited run. It reminds me of what I've loved about things like Spider-Woman. And I'll definitely be picking this up.
Is it just a miniseries ultimately, or is it not going...
Just a miniseries.
Okay.
The whole Grounded thing was basically a short thing.
Okay.
So Rocket, Groot, and
lots of different stories about the Guardians on Earth, right?
Yep. There's U.S. Avengers number 5, which I've been really digging, which this issue has Captain America basically confronting Robert DaCosta about his sort of renegade AIM operation because he's wanted to bring him to heel under his new shield before things go crazy. Descendant number 21. Always love that book.
Is that four Jeff Lemire projects this week?
Yes, it might be.
Yeah, we got Descender, Royal City, the graphic novel.
Yep.
And something else. Maybe just another graphic novel.
Moon Knight.
And Moon Knight, Jesus. Yep.
Doctor Strange. I haven't had a chance to read this yet, but we're coming up on the end of Aaron Abicalo's run. Black Hair number 8. Five Jeff Lemire projects, by the way.
I was wrong that Roughneck being next to Royal City on the wall was like some marketing thing, but when you see them all hitting this week, and you see the planning in his head, he's like Ozymandias from Watchmen.
No, Dave, I believe it is just that Lemire does so much work, there's probably always at least one.
In any given week, you look next to one of his books, you're likely to find another one.
The guy's a workhorse. He's like Bendis at his height, but he's actually still good.
And he can draw.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
That was two burns on Bendis for one.
Sick.
I love Black Hammer, and I've been loving this book. Astro City number 43, which I think most people are reading in trades, but people should be reading it. It's a great book. And then one last thing. There's a Hellboy original graphic novel this week. It's sort of a small one. It has got art by Gary Gianni, and it is beautiful. And it's just a...
Gary Gianni does that cool illustrator style.
Yeah. It is a story of Hellboy aboard a ship, competing a tyrannical captain who plans to sell him to the circus, and a mysterious woman seeking a legendary serpent that's haunted the sea since the dawn of time. So, kind of a fun Hellboy on a boat story.
Nice.
Alright, that wraps it up for comics for us this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some podcasts and possibly some movies. So we each have a podcast to mention, and I want to talk about Manifest Zone, which is a new podcast based on the world of Eberron, the D&D world, which is kind of a cult favorite, maybe, but is my favorite setting, and this new podcast is, it's two episodes in, each episode is about an hour long, and it is three DMs who've run, one of whom has written a Savage Worlds, sort of the Savage Worlds guide to running Eberron, so you can play it instead of D&D, one of whom I believe worked on like the Fate version, and then Keith Baker, who created Eberron, is also there, and in it they talk about the history of the world, what makes it different to run, and it's sort of a really, if you're at all an Eberron geek, which I absolutely am, they talk about what makes Eberron Eberron, what makes it different from other settings. The first episode is basically them introducing themselves and then sort of talking about what Eberron is and isn't, and how it's not steampunk, but it's got trappings of it, how it is D&D, but not D&D, all that kind of thing, other systems to run it in, that kind of thing. And then the second episode, they talk about the Last War and how that influenced Eberron and sort of some of the history, and how that makes the good tie-ins to your campaign. This is all making me, giving me lots of ideas to run my game, and it's also just fascinating as someone who's a fan of the setting. So if you're at all a fan of Eberron, I definitely recommend the Manifest Zone podcast. Dave, I know you caught up on that podcast that Nick and I had finished.
Yeah, I'm just going to... I don't want to reveal what happens in it, so I won't talk too much, but S-Town, which... It's like the number one podcast right now, so I'm probably really not needing my hype at all. But I did want to say I did find it to be a very satisfying ending, and the structure in particular of the, seven, I think, episodes?
Yeah, seven episodes.
All roughly somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour long, was very satisfying and leads to some very interesting and sometimes dark but intriguing conclusions in the final episode.
I think dark sort of encapsulates the entire affair.
Yeah. What's interesting though is this is kind of a dark story set in it's Alabama, right?
Alabama.
Small town Alabama. It's got racism, homophobia, but also weird hedge mazes, buried gold, infighting amongst relatives,
and it's all real.
Weird nipple piercing stories, like truly strange stuff, and a super super smart clock making backwoods yokel who ends up having a very sad and strange story with some amazing revelations that come out as the series goes along.
Yeah,
I think it was you, Randy, who said that you had heard it described as novelistic.
Yeah,
and the way that kind of is layered, the way they structured it, which from the beginning it seems like one thing and it kind of becomes something else by the second episode.
Yeah,
but it does, and it continues to evolve, and it's kind of like I always feel like every episode was making it more and more layered.
Yeah,
even though this is a real story, it could have just been very documentary like. But I think real kudos to the editing of it and the structuring of it. I know they had like a lot of the best This American Life editors on it. Yeah. Like I heard like Ira Glass in there, but also like, is it Starley
Kine?
Is she the mystery
show?
She
did Mystery Show.
Yeah. So herself and an accomplished podcaster. They it is such a fascinating story. right up into the very end. So I definitely want to give that a recommendation.
And Nick?
I just had a, want a quick shout out to one I'm just heard about and kind of catching up called Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is sort of a recorded on a from in front of a live studio audience, sort of kind of quasi old school radio play.
Go back style. To like that old 40s radio show yeah. style.
And it's just a series of sort of comedic things, one with different characters involved, but they get a ton of great cast members.
Is it like, meant to sound, I mean, like, is it meant to be like you're an audience member hearing this, or is it meant to be like, what's the structure?
I mean, each one just starts out, you know, a story.
It's like so. You're just hearing the story. It's just filmed in such a way that it sounds like one of those old radio shows with live effects and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and things like that. But, I mean, one focuses on two, I mean, a married couple and who are...
You said sort of Nick, like and, the, Nick and Nora...
Nick and Nora meets from the Thin Stephen Man King style. Style.
Right, right. Stories. A couple of drunky husband and wife investigating strange yes. mysteries.
And another one sort of focuses on a marshal on Mars. And then there's an ongoing story about the creature from the Black Lagoon. The person who plays the creature from the Black Lagoon from the original movies. And it's all sort of done tongue-in-cheek style.
Mm-hmm.
And they all get fantastic voice actors. I mean, Nathan Fillion's been on, Patton Oswalt's been on, Aubrey Plaza's been on. So sort of the...
It's interesting to start seeing between this and like, was it Homecoming? To start seeing some of these podcasts that are landing pretty notable names.
Yeah. But this is all played for laughs.
Right,
I
right.
mean,
this
it's
is comedic.
All satirical and hilarious. Yeah. And... I have laughed out loud more probably in this podcast than
probably
any
more
other.
Than you did listening to S-Town.
Yes. Although I did laugh during S-Town there was.
Yeah, for all that it's a very dark story, it has some weird and hilarious moments.
Yes. But yeah, no, Thrilling Adventure Hour. I'm really enjoying
okay.
it.
Okay. Need to give that a shot at some point.
All right. Let's talk Fast and the Furious.
Okay.
So we might offer some spoilers for Fate of the Furious here. So if you haven't seen it... there's going to be some spoilers to the
we'll
intricate...
talk spoilers, the, but really you have to see it.
Yeah. We may ruin the intricate plot of a Fast and the Furious movie.
Now, Randy, you've been resisting this series for many moons.
I have been resisting this series for a long... I saw the original Fast and the Furious, and I liked it fine, but I was like, I don't need to see any more of this. And then everyone started talking about it, and I think I watched one on HBO, Fast and Furious, which the fourth one,
yep.
which a lot of people regard as sort of the beginning of this story,
yeah.
Came on, and I watched maybe like 20 minutes, and I'm like, this looks more like, this is not for me. And what I should have done, and what I finally did, is what Dave told me, which is, start with Fast 5.
Yep.
Because Fast 5 is where it became, a lot of people, when I was talking about this on my Facebook, a lot of people started talking like, oh no, you should watch Fast and Furious, that's where the story all starts. And that may be true.
Yeah, they're not wrong.
But I'm a comic book fan, man. I can drop into the middle of a story if I can get into the interesting part.
And these are comic book movies, as it turns out.
And Fast 5 is where it becomes basically a movie about a crew and a heist and everything I want.
Right. They're like the fast car driving Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That started as a small time crew going after... Yeah. Stealing from
yep. Yeah. Like I say, the older ones are they are to me the Silver Age comics era of the Fast and the Furious movies, yep. And this is kind of the modern era where
see, I think
kind of
now that Randy's watched the newer ones, he can go back and watch it and appreciate them a little
right.
bit
yes.
more.
Now it's like going back yeah. and reading some Showcase DC
yeah,
or whatever or some Marvel Masterworks or whatever.
You get an early look at Tyrese Gibson's crazy character when he, you know, see him for the first time.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to going back and watching 2, 3, and 4. I'll probably watch 1 again, too, to see the backstory of all this stuff. But I watched over the course of the weekend 5, 6, and 7. So
you
I'm ready
it.
To watch Fate of the Furious. And this is really, it's like Dave said, it's a comic book series in a lot of ways. There's a lot of continuity. There's some comedic elements, but it's also like it's got a lot of heist stuff. There's a scene in Fast Five where they put together the crew, which I love a good put together the
yeah.
crew scene.
Yes,
this is what I wanted the Expendables to be.
Right,
it's a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen of action movies.
Yeah,
and in the fact that there's a character in Fate of the Furious who I believe is a stealth nod to the Red series.
yes, yeah.
But so I wanted to sort of run down. 5, 6, and 7 for me, because I'm curious to hear from you guys who have seen all of it. There's definitely a bad guys become good. That's the thing that happens a lot.
Yeah. But that's sort of a comic book trope, too.
Especially with the X-Men.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, like, the Rock becoming their... He's there. There's their nemesis in the first one.
Right. And I do think that was expected, that he would come around as the hero in it. Because he was like... He was like a hard-ass cop, basically. Or was he a cop, or is he like an FBI?
He works for Diplomatic Security Service, which is their
their shield.
Their shield.
Yeah, it basically is.
Well, no, I mean, it's not, because shield is
by Kurt Russell.
It's Kurt Russell.
This is more of their...
it's basically FBI.
Yeah.
Right. The FBI equivalent of Interpol or something that.
Yeah.
But you could tell, I think I could tell right from the beginning, though, that he would have to form a grudging respect for them and eventual friendship.
Well, but she needed that conversation.
But first he had to fight the hell out of Vin Diesel.
Well, because his elite team gets killed, and then he is rescued by Dominic Toretto, and was it Brian is there, too?
Yeah. I feel like their first fight was, like, him jumping him and, like, busting through a wall.
They fought inside a garage or something?
The scene where they're in the favelas? Luke Hobbs, who's The Rock's character...
Yeah.
Tracks them down to the favelas in Brazil.
Yeah.
And then Vin Diesel's making a run for it, and he crashes out a window.
Yeah.
And then The Rock comes, like, through another window or a wall right behind him. So it's like, these guys both through crash. So you know how, like, in The Shield that we all love, Vic Mackey, like, crashed through a wall and...
Yes.
Right. And, it'd be like if he ran into another wall crasher.
Yes. It was so good.
It was an irresistible force meeting an immovable object.
Yes.
And by the way, as I recall... They fight, like, so hardcore in that one that, you know, normal people would be dead.
Yep.
But they're kind of like... They dust themselves off and they're okay.
Yep.
You know, it's like, I got a bruise.
Yep. Then they decide they're going to heist this drug lord who was the bad guy in 4.
Yep.
And he's played by Joaquin Almeida?
Or, yes, that is correct, but you might know him as the Latin Jack Ryan.
They might, but that's an old reference then.
Man, that's such a good one.
Is that from Patriot Games?
Yeah.
No, Clear and Present Danger.
Clear and Present Danger.
And there's an insane sequence where they're driving a safe down the road and using it to smash cars.
You know what I loved is that they had to practice for that heist.
Yep.
And, like, so they needed to get their own copy of this super high-tech safe and go through this awesome and ridiculous drill to kind of practice it.
By the way, I also love, this is the thing the heist movies do. They do the thing where it looks like they've failed, but then they flash back and reveal that they succeeded. Like, the whole reason they have a second safe becomes, it's not just like train, like they throw it at the audience like, oh, I need this so I can work on it. And then later there's a reason there's a second save.
And it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They actually do a few twists like that. Fate of the Furious does a cool reveal sequence in it, which was one of my favorite parts of the whole movie.
Yeah. But the thing I liked about Fast Five, you know, in addition to all of that stuff, and all the Fast movies, is we're used to a lot of CGI. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely CGI in this.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's
they did fight a submarine.
This harkens back to sort of 70s, like, Blues Brother. Like, they love smashing cars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the bigger the car, the better.
This harkens back to what I liked about The Rock. This is the stuff I like about Michael Bay, but both Justin Lin and James Wan and whoever directed Fate of the Furious are better directors and can tell stories.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, Randy, pretty early on in Fast Five, they do that train heist.
Yes, they
and
open
I,
it with
I loved it. The train heist.
Oh, the train heist is great, where they're pulling them off the train with a little gear.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really brilliant filming in there.
Yep.
It's very honestly, they filmed the action very clearly in these, it occurs to me. And yet it's really outrageous kind of fun stuff. But I mean, like, also a big part of it for me is I like the crew.
Yeah.
The word family gets bandied about
a lot
in these movies. But I can, you know, I feel like in some ways it's not the worst thing that an action movie could have some heart to it.
Yeah.
But also... They're all fun to watch. It's kind of like when you're watching the Avengers, and you're like, every individual character is kind of fun to hang out with for a bit.
I mean, the characters are great. They banter with each other. I mean, Ludacris and Tyrese Gibson's characters bantering, especially in Fast Five.
And in the most recent Fate of the Furious, I very much enjoyed the trash talk going on between Jason Statham and The Rock, who hate each other and just spit venom constantly.
So that's one thing I want to mention is that. The continuity of this is really good. Like, it's they introduce the villain. Each villain leads into the next villain. And then, inevitably, the villain winds up joining the team somehow.
Right.
And I wasn't sure they were going to do this. And there is one problem with Fate of the Furious. And that is that...
Nick and I did talk about this, too.
And everybody's talked about this. That Jason Statham's character, Owen Shaw, I believe. Is he Owen Shaw or is he...
He is Owen and his brother's Deckard.
His brother Deckard. No, he's Deckard Shaw.
He's Deckard.
His brother is Owen.
Yes.
So Deckard Shaw kills Han.
Right. One of the crew.
Yes.
And you can't have the family theme and then have, like, just embrace the guy who killed your family. So I feel like they need to reveal that Han's alive. In order for me to buy into it, they really wanted them.
I really wanted them to that to be the reveal at the post credits reveal, which there was not a post credits sequence in this one.
Yeah, they stopped doing post credits in 7 too. It didn't have one either. Because 7 was also the tribute to Paul Walker, and they didn't want to finish that Paul Walker thing.
I mean, that makes sense.
But I wish they'd gone back to it because a post credit sequence for one thing is a superhero tradition and belongs here.
Yeah.
And for another, I need them to bring back Han if you want me to buy the Shaws. I understand that what Deckard Shaw did is the kind of thing that Dominic would forgive him for anything.
Right.
Like, but the rest of the team shouldn't.
Yeah. 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 He's generally was a very bad guy who happened to do one really good thing.
Yeah.
Honestly, the Fate of the Furious kind of painted him in a different picture. It wasn't that he was like a villain. He was basically saying he was screwed over by his government. And he was burned. He was actually like the best of the best.
You did find out some more things about him, which were a little bit silly, quick reveals.
Oh, sure.
But
they played to Statham what he does best.
Well, here's the thing. I liked watching him in that role. His scene on board the C-130 type plane is epic.
Yeah.
It's like he has his own mini heist and action sequence.
Oh, yeah.
With probably the best guy running around shooting people while carrying a baby since John Woo's Hard-Boiled.
His weird bonding with the baby and the clearly CGI baby motions and stuff cracked me the hell up.
Yeah, it's just... I think that's the heart of the series for me is that I know it's dumb.
And they know it's dumb.
And even like some of the banter between them is real kind of bro-ish. But, like, it's so kind of good-natured in its way, so silly that I find myself laughing at its silliness, like, in, like, a way that I really enjoy. I'm not like, oh, my God, this is stupid. I'm like, oh, this is so stupid. It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, Cypher, their bad guy played by Charlize Theron, who's clearly loving this.
She gets to be a bad person.
She's wickedly evil, but they're hacking... is like we're hackers level hacking here. Like,
right.
I am almost certain that zombie cars wouldn't work that way, but I don't give a shit because it was amazing.
It was.
I know full well that you can't launch a nuclear submarine out of the when its propeller is in the air.
Yes,
and that with no crew, I am pretty sure you can't drive a nuclear submarine. But I don't care.
The best way to stop an armored vehicle, Randy, is to surround it by like 100 crashed cars.
Yep.
That is definitely the best way to heist.
Well, it's certainly a way I've never seen before.
It was an amazing sequence. It was so much fun. And then she's like, make it rain, and then start pouring out. I mean, it was so much fun.
That, and also, but what is it, when Dom shows up and he's got his, like, Jaws of Life, razor saw thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, there is a superhero quality to their visuals. Yep. And I was also talking about when they do the prison break sequence, which is a great sequence, which if you think about it for too long, I'm like, cops could have gotten killed in that sequence.
Yeah.
And here's Kurt Russell as they're very fun, camping it up as a Nick Fury
type. Nick Fury. Mr. Nobody.
Clearly happy to see it happening, but I'm like, man, they look like people could die in this. Yep. And it was, but to them, it's a cool prison escape sequence.
And by the way, Let's talk about Kurt Russell for a second. That guy's having the time of his life in this role.
I feel like he is.
It is the Nick Fury role. He gets to be the badass. His scene in 6 where he puts on the glasses and has night vision and goes out with two guns and just starts killing people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Kurt Russell's a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's, no matter how big things get, like, they could be on the brink of thermonuclear warfare, he's amused by the whole thing.
Yeah.
You get the sense of Mr. Nobody's like, I'm in control of it.
Yeah. It's an interesting personality type they've chosen, like, where his primary personality type is sort of bemused.
Yeah. Well, and they introduce Little Nobody.
Yeah.
Who is played by Clint Eastwood's son.
Yep.
Scott Eastwood.
Yep. Kind of clearly the handsome Paul Walker-ish white boy.
He's the Paul Walker replacement.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of white boys, though, I actually want to say one of the things that I enjoy about the series, a little more multicultural than most action movies.
Yeah.
You get a little bit more variety here. Seems to be a fair amount of stuff sort of set in Latin America, in and around there.
Yep.
So I went into this having binged everything.
Yep.
But my friend Ben went with me. He had seen no Fast and the Furious.
Oh, my God.
And he loved it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's great.
He said there were a couple nods where he like everybody was laughing and he's like, yeah, that was clearly a nod to something I didn't understand. Like when the two Brazilian dudes show up,
yeah,
he's like, I don't know what that was, but I love that. It's a little nod. But you could drop into this and enjoy the hell out of it. Clearly,
right. That's what had happened with me with Fast Five.
We're running low on time. I could talk about this for 20 more minutes.
Right.
But I do want to mention the 9th and 10th movies are coming out on April 19th, 2019, and April 2nd, 2021.
Yeah,
and the 9th one is called The Faith of the Furious and is scheduled to include Rome and Vatican City.
Oh my God. Totally in.
Yeah.
Totally in.
I mean, at this point, it's just insane. Their comment not too long ago was like, they could go in space. I believe that.
Yeah, me too.
They've had zombie cars at this point. Why not?
Yeah.
Well, you have to work up what kind of big vehicle they're going to fight next time. They went from a tank to a submarine.
Moon buggies.
Yeah, moon buggies. I think
it's clearly the way it has to go.
By the way, F. Gary Gray, the guy who directed the latest version, he directed Set It Off, The Negotiator, The Italian Job, and Straight Outta Compton.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a pedigree there.
And I think it says something, these guys who have these pedigrees do Fast and the Furious movies. It's got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think they're the best party movies. Like, I have seen the last four now at the theater, and they've been, just as I always enjoy, almost on a party level, going to see a new Tarantino movie, these kind of function similarly.
You know what you might say? Mm-hmm. I think that when you go on the set, it's like you're part of a family.
It's a little bit like that, fam.
All right, that is it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.